Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's conference call on Defenders of Wildlife's new report on jaguar recovery in the U.S. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note, this call is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn today's program over to Ms. Catalina Trusky. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and welcome everyone. I'm Catalina Trusky, a communications associate here at Defenders of Wildlife, and I'd just like to share a really brief overview of our report and then hand it over to our report author, Dr. Rob Peters. Defenders' new report on jaguar recovery in the U.S., called Bringing El Tigre Home, provides an overview of jaguars in the U.S. and the ecological, economic, and aesthetic benefits of their recovery. There are several current and potential challenges to recovering this elusive species, including the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's lack of commitment to jaguar recovery in the U.S. and the Trump administration's proposed border wall. In Bringing El Tigre Home, Defenders puts forth recommendations for the Fish and Wildlife Service, the stewards of our endangered species recovery, to bring the big cat back to its homeland in the U.S. Southwest. Photos from the report will be available upon request. Now I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Rob Peters, the author of our new report. Rob?
Thanks, Catalina. Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be able to talk with you today. So I think the most fascinating things about the jaguar in the U.S. is that, against all odds, they keep showing up. I'm sure you probably know there have been at least 7 jaguars in the U.S. since 1986, and 2 showed up in Arizona just last year at the end of the year. Of these 7, we know that 6 were males for sure. We're not sure yet about the last one that was identified in the Dos Cabezas Mountains, but the odds are that it's a male too, because females are homebodies and they just don't like to travel like the males do. One scientist calculated it would take decades, possibly centuries, for females just to reach the U.S. border, let alone settle in the U.S. itself. The males are almost certainly coming up from a small population of jaguars centered around the Northern Jaguar Reserve in Sonora, Mexico, some 100 miles south of the U.S. border. So they've got a long, dangerous way to come. So with all that in mind, where are we on jaguar recovery? We know that the habitat is here for them. El Jefe and Macho B live for years in the U.S., proving that there's suitable prey for them, that the conditions are right. And one of the things that really amazed me when I first started working on this report was how much food is out there for jaguars, white-tailed deer, and javelina, their favorites. The number of white-tailed deer in Arizona Game and Fish surveys has gone up from 1947 to 2014 by more than 2,000%. We're not sure how much of that is due to different methodologies at different times, but it's clear there's a whole lot of food out there. So if we can get a population established in the U.S., there's every reason to think it will do well. So is it enough just to let a few males trickle up from Mexico? Well, we don't think so. Defenders wants to see an active, determined effort by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to create real recovery, a reproducing healthy populations of jaguars in the U.S. Ideally, this U.S. population would be connected to the one in Mexico because big, you know, spread out, well-connected populations survive better. Unfortunately, the service's draft recovery plan for U.S. jaguars essentially gives up on establishing a population in the U.S., leaving the lion's share of protecting jaguars to Mexico. The service has a longstanding lack of commitment to jaguar recovery. Jaguars weren't listed, or I should say U.S. jaguars weren't listed until 1997, although foreign jaguars were listed in 75, more than 20 years earlier. It took lawsuits to force the listing, and it took lawsuits for the Fish and Wildlife Service to designate critical habitat in 2014 and to start developing the draft recovery plan. So before we read this plan, came out in December, the draft plan, we were hoping the service had turned around and was aiming for a real recovery in the U.S. While the plan correctly concludes that protecting Mexican jaguars is essential and that the U.S. must work with Mexico to keep those populations strong. The plan thinks small and makes a couple critical decisions that make restoring jaguars to the U.S. highly unlikely. First, we've got maps in our report, which some of you may have seen, that indicate the service arbitrarily put the northern border of the recovery area at Interstate 10 less than 100 miles from the border. And this area in the U.S. in the recovery area isn't nearly big enough to sustain a viable population of jaguars, and the Fish and Wildlife Service itself contracted a population viability analysis that calculated that area, recovery area in the U.S. could at best sustain 2 to 4 females. So by not considering recovery north of I-10, the service excluded millions of acres of potential jaguar habitat, and again, you can see this in the map in the report, particularly in the Mogollon Rim area of Arizona, New Mexico, which is a place that jaguars used to live. And indeed, it's where the last known U.S. female jaguar was killed in 1963. One of our colleagues here at Defenders, a biologist named Craig Miller, has spent the last 20 years tramping around the Mogollon Rim area, and he says from personal knowledge that it's great jaguar habitat with plenty of food. So we also have in the report, a critical piece of it is a map of jaguar habitat that was modeled in 2010 for the jaguar conservation team using parameters developed by that team. And you can see there a broad expanse of potential habitat north of I-10, verifying what Craig already knows from personal professional observation. So the next big thing the service missed is the possibility of translocating jaguars. Translocating means releasing them in the U.S. So if they were to be released here, we could address the problem that females don't travel. So we're calling on the service to do a scientific objective assessment of the translocation option rather than just waiting decades or centuries in the hopes that females somehow will show up. Finally, I'll mention two additional factors that threaten the future of U.S. jaguars. First is the service's attitude toward plans for large mines and other development projects in jaguar territory. For example, the Rosemont open pit copper mine would sit right in the middle of El Jefe's home range in the Santa Rita Mountains. And the service evaluated this mine as part of a biological opinion, or they did a biological opinion on it, and gave it a go-ahead because even though it would disturb a couple hundred square miles where El Jefe lives, they say that there are lots of other jaguars in the world, so the loss of El Jefe essentially wouldn't matter. Second big threat is the border wall. You'll see in our report a map that shows the amount of border wall already built in red, cutting across most of the border where jaguars could be coming up from Mexico. There are still openings in the wall, but if Trump's administration completes the wall, no more jaguars will be able to reach the U.S. from Mexico. So unless the service is willing to translocate them, the wall would be the end of jaguars in the U.S. Defenders of Wildlife opposes the wall that's already built because of its dire effects on wildlife, and we oppose more building of the wall that would slam the door on jaguars forever. So we're calling on the Fish and Wildlife Service to be a true champion of real jaguar recovery, which means establishing a breeding population of jaguars in the U.S. The comment period on the draft jaguar plan closed yesterday, so we'll be looking ahead to the final plan, and we're hoping the service will come out with one that has a real chance of reestablishing viable population of jaguars in the U.S. The jaguar is, you know, as you guys know, truly an amazing creature. It was once widespread in the U.S. It's part of our cultural, natural heritage, and its loss is a tragedy. And as the report says in its title, we need to bring it home. So thank you. At this point, we can take questions.
If you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. We'll pause a moment to allow questions to queue. We'll take our first question from Ashton Galvin of the Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Hi, Rob. I was wondering, do you have any idea what the cost of this recovery effort that you are proposing would be? And secondly, what you think the chances of that are, considering what the president's budget is and what, you know, his priorities have been?
If you give me 1 second, I can pull the exact number up from my report, in which, let's see, Fish and Wildlife Service that did do an estimate for their recovery plan. Let's see. So they estimated a cost of $56 million for the first 5 years and $605 million over 50 years. And that's an estimated time to recover the jaguar, although most of that recovery that they're having their plan would be recovery essentially in Mexico. So whether it's hard to know what the cost would be if they were, for example, to shift some of their work from Mexico or to the U.S., or if they did the work we're asking for in the U.S., whether that would be an add-on to work in Mexico. I'm sorry, I can't give you an exact number, but I think, you know, that $56 million for the first 5 years and $605 million for 50 years that the service put out in the draft plan will give you kind of a ballpark. Does that answer well enough?
I'm assuming that when you put together some of these proposals, like when you talk about translocation, I mean, what kind of cost are we looking at for something like that? And again, knowing what we know about what kind of budget the president wants to have, I mean, what is the likelihood that some of this can be achieved?
Great question. I do not know amounts for translocation. That's one of the weaknesses in the draft plan, is that they did not evaluate the option at all. It's interesting to me that the ocelot recovery plan, the final that came out last year, has translocation as a central strategy in the plan, and they did extensive analysis of what would be involved in translocation and the effect of pulling animals from the Mexican Tamaulipas population to augment the ocelots in Texas. So, but they didn't do anything like that for jaguars. So because they haven't done the basic analysis, the basic scientific analysis, we really don't know what's needed to be done, and we don't know what it would cost. So that's one of our big asks, is for the service to do that analysis in an objective scientific way. And we'd also like whatever they do to be reviewed by perhaps an outside scientific organization like the Society for Conservation Biology or the American Association for the Academy of Sciences. Advancement of Sciences. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Hi, Astrid. This is Catalina as well. In just regards to the skinny budget, we have been looking at it here, and we can connect to some folks that can talk to you more about the skinny budget for you.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm just generally wondering, like, what, you know, Rob's specific thoughts are on that, because he must, you know, it must be on his mind, like, what kind of either barriers or obstacles or whatever that you guys are looking at in light of this.
Yeah, I guess I'll just say that translocation is a standard element of the tool set that state game and fish agencies and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service uses all the time for a wide variety of species. So it's not something that's inordinately expensive.
And we'll take our next question from Dan Zakowski of Enviro News. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, Rob and Catalina. Two quick questions. One is, you mentioned the population recovery of white-tailed deer. Have you looked at the impact? Is that an overpopulation at this point? Would that be controlled better by the reintroduction of jaguars in the habitat? And second question would be, are there other organizations that have joined with you or may join with you in support of your recommendations here?
Okay, first question. I am not a white-tailed deer expert. So I pulled those figures from the annual report by Arizona Game and Fish as the result of their surveys for a number of species. I did talk to them about those surveys, and one of the difficulties in interpreting the data, not to get too technical, but the original methodologies that were used for those surveys in the late 40s, early 50s are sort of lost in the mists of time. So that's why, you know, I use this caveat that we don't know exactly the degree to which that 2,000 plus percent increase is due to methodology changes and how much of it is real, but it's clear that there's a whole lot of prey around. And one of the things I find really interesting, if you go back 100 and more years when we still had quite a few more jaguars, we still had reproducing jaguars and cubs in Arizona, you had generally less prey available because it was being hunted without the kind of controls that we have now. So, you know, it's clear that, you know, back then there was less prey, now there's more prey, and again, we can turn to, you know, Macho B and El Jefe and see, well, they were certainly, you know, fat and happy most of the time they were living here. I can't tell you if I know that, I don't know whether the whitetail population would be considered an overpopulation at this point. You know, obviously that's an issue with deer throughout many parts of the U.S., but I will say that just as a sort of general rule that it's been established over and over again by conservation biologists that the top predators, the keystone predators like wolves, like jaguars, are critical in maintaining ecological balance. And if you remove those predators, all sorts of things happen. And one of them can frequently be overabundance of prey species. You know, I can't tell you for sure, though, but as a general issue, it's a really great thing to get those top apex predators back into the landscape, back into the ecosystem, so the ecosystems sort of recover and become functioning like they were in the past when those predators were there. The next question, we just submitted a comment letter to Fish and Wildlife Service, our official comments on the draft recovery plan. And we had a couple other signatories on that, on our comments. One of them, who we do a lot of work with on protecting jaguar and other habitat from some mines that are proposed in the Patagonia Mountains, is the Patagonia Area Resource Alliance. They're a great grassroots ally of ours.
Great, thank you. And is, you mentioned El Jefe, is that animal known to still be alive?
El Jefe is temporarily gone missing. I don't know exactly when he last showed up, but it was, I think, a little over 6 months ago. And there's lots of possibilities. He's obviously a peripatetic jaguar that found his way up here from Mexico. So one possibility is he got lonely and has gone home looking for females. One jaguar biologist suggested to me he may actually have gone north of I-10. We don't know, but of course, we're all hoping he'll show up again. And the University of Arizona has some addition. They still have cameras out, and they're still looking in his old territory and other places that are likely.
Great, thank you.
Sure.
We have one more question from Astrid Galvin. Please go ahead.
Me again. Just
hey, Astrid.
When you, out of all of these kind of recommendations that you have, is there one or two that you think would have the greatest impact in the recovery effort?
Yes. Number one. Oh, God. It's hard to, you know, it's actually hard to say because there's a bunch of them are really important, but I would say number one is consider all of the habitat in Arizona and New Mexico. Don't do this arbitrary cutoff at I-10. I mean, if you look at the map in our report, you'll see, oh, it's just drawn along I-10. And you'll see, and this is something else I'd just like to touch on. There's the map is based on work that was done for the using the parameters of the Jaguar Conservation Team, which isn't in existence right now. It was disbanded, but it was sort of early 2000s group of stakeholders, including jaguar experts, and there was a habitat subcommittee that came up with these parameters that were used in this map. One of the things I say in the report, which is very true, is that any habitat mapping, the final map you get depends entirely on the parameters you put in and the range of those parameters. For example, the Fish and Wildlife Service mapping south of I-10 cut off a lot of the high altitude habitat. Well, if you cut out some of the high altitude, then, you know, you diminish the amount of apparent potential habitat. So we're not saying that the map in our report is, you know, more accurate than anyone else's map, but we've got, there's that map, and then there were a couple other mapping exercises done that are referenced in the report that also found lots of habitat north of I-10. So I think the most important thing and the most curious thing about the Fish and Wildlife Service draft recovery plan is that it stopped at I-10. Like, why not consider those millions of acres to the north of I-10 where we know jaguars used to live?
Okay, thank you.
I feel like there's part of your question still hanging out there, but I asked it, but I don't remember. Was there more?
Well, I just asked if there were one or two kind of top priorities.
Yeah, and I think the other one that's absolutely critical, of course, is this issue of translocation. We don't feel at this point that we have the information, because Fish and Wildlife Service hasn't done the basic analysis, to know for sure whether translocation will work, but it's hard to imagine why it wouldn't. Many big cats have been successfully moved. There are a number of cases referenced in the report where jaguars were, you know, sometimes problem jaguar, for example, in Mexico that was eating stock was moved to a more remote area where there weren't cattle to eat, and it was seen on camera, you know, a year or so later. So clearly the techniques are there to translocate them. You know, there'd obviously be, there are technical issues, there are political issues, you know, it would have to be done transborder, and it would have to be done clearly without harming the donor populations, which would likely be in Mexico. And that's another thing we asked for in the report, that, you know, in order for translocation to happen, that the U.S. would have to support conservation down in Mexico to make sure those populations there are robust enough to be able to withstand taking some jaguars over time out. But that analysis has not been done. So I would say the second big thing of the report is that analysis has got to be done, because without translocation, it is really hard to imagine how a breeding population of jaguars is ever going to get established in the U.S. I was really floored when I first looked at this work by Peter Warshall in 2014, published in, I think it's in Oryx, where he was calculating in a fairly simplistic way how long it might take jaguars, female jaguars, at the rate they disperse, to get from the Northern Jaguar Reserve, 100 plus miles down in Mexico, to the U.S. border. And he calculated the most optimistic scenario was 44 years, and all the way out to, I think it was 243 years. So, you know, without translocation, it's hard to imagine how we're going to get a population of breeding males and females in the U.S. And then the third big thing, of course, is the border wall. The border wall would be an absolute disaster. You know, it would if it's completed with pedestrian barriers throughout jaguar corridors, it would completely preclude the option of jaguars getting to the U.S. on their own.
Thank you.
Sure.
Once again, to ask questions, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. It appears we have no further questions at this time. Actually, I take that out. We have a question from Rebecca Tesla of Mongo Bay. Please go ahead.
Hi there. I'm just curious, having not tried to peruse the comments yet, I'm curious if there are vocal supporters of this plan and who they are and what their reasoning might be.
Of which plan? The Fish and Wildlife Service plan or our plan?
Fish and Wildlife draft plan, yeah.
The draft plan. I don't know. Most of the local, you know, people that I talk to are not happy with it. Now, there could very well be, I don't know. It's a broad community. So when I say that people I've talked to, I'm talking about jaguar biologists and members of local conservation groups. On the other hand, we have to, you know, respect the thoughts, opinions of other groups that may be concerned, like ranchers might be an example, or some hunters might be an example. So there are some within those groups that might have concerns, but there are also a lot of ranchers and hunters that would support jaguar restoration. So I think that probably the most important thing to say to people that do have concerns is that Defenders has a long history of working with what's called coexistence projects. We're really involved with coexistence projects on the Mexican wolf, for example. And the idea is there that we work with ranchers, we provide funding, some of which has, you know, comes to us from federal and other sources, to help the ranchers manage their stock in a way that decreases the probability that predation will occur. And there are things as, when I was first learning about this, the first thing that really, really made me laugh or really interested me was fladry, F-L-A-D-R-Y, which is using flags on, basically on string or that look similar to what you would see down at your local used car lot that's having their, big 4th of July sale pennants hanging from string, and that works really well to keep wolves away from livestock. So there's a lot of things that can be done. We were also really involved down in Mexico working with the Northern Jaguar Project and Naturalia in helping them develop coexistent projects down there. And they've been really successful in enlisting local ranchers to work with them. And one of the things that they do is provide money, rewards of different kinds. Sometimes it's helping them build a water tank. Sometimes it's cash. If jaguars or other cats like mountain lions, ocelots, and bobcats are photographed by trail cameras on their property. So, they're really positive ways to decrease conflict between ranchers and others and livestock. And, you know, Defenders, of course, is an expert on that, and we're trying to reach out as much as we can. So, you know, we think that, you know, these kind of solutions could be really effective with jaguars.
It appears we have no further questions at this time. If you'd like to ask one more question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. We'll pause a moment to allow questions to queue. And we'll take our next question from Tony Davis of the Arizona Daily Star. Please go ahead.
Yes, Rob.
Hey, Tony.
Good morning. I understand that you're aware that there's political issues with things like translocation and reintroduction, but the wolf thing has been a huge source. It certainly had some successes. I don't want to diminish the successes, but it's also had huge major conflicts, political, legal conflicts here. Are you prepared for something like this with the jaguar? I mean, the impression I have is that ranchers would be more against the jaguar than the wolf. because perhaps they're seen as bigger and more fearsome. I don't really know. I haven't talked to them, but that's the impression I have. Anyway, go ahead.
I'll just have to answer you with an impression of my own, because I haven't either. So I guess my thought is that, and I'm purely hypothesizing now, it's possible that jaguars would not be as big a problem because they're solitary, pretty cryptic, and they, you know, tend to avoid people. And as I mentioned, there's a lot of prey for them. So non-stock prey. So, you know, we have had jaguars in the U.S. that, you know, so far as we know, haven't posed a major problem. I was told recently, so what else can I say about that? There are always political issues, but when you have a good plan, coexistent techniques that really work, I think, you know, there's a path towards success.
It appears we have no further questions at this time.
Well, thank you all for joining us today at this briefing. If you have any additional questions, either now or later, please call me at 202-772-0253. Again, that's 202-772-0253. Thank you all so much.
Bye, guys.